Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Salutations, everybody. It is Maddie here today with week, is it 96? It's a special week, regardless, of the Ham Radio podcast.
And it is made alone, Paul Wanderer.
And it's me, Carrick, with ACG.
We finally have our first special guest of the year. We promised you guys we're going to try to do this more often. Tom, would you kindly introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Tom Taylorson. I'm a voice actor, probably most notably right now, Scott Ryder in Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yeah, the male protagonist. All right. So
I just had to say, as soon as Tom joined the Skype call, I'm thinking, this guy's a voice actor. His voice just suits it perfectly.
It's the microphone. It's the microphone. It's a very nice, expensive microphone.
So, you know, Mass Effect just went gold today. We were briefly talking about it beforehand. How are you feeling about that, knowing that, as you said, discs are being printed and the reception is soon going to be out there?
Yeah, cool. I don't know what else to say. You know, amid all of this, you know, one of the designers put out there, it's like, oh, it's been a great 5-year journey. And I had to kind of make note of the fact that they'd been at work for 4 years on this game before I had even auditioned for the project. Wow. So while I've had like a year and a half kind of on and off, you know, it was kind of pretty heavy this last late summer, fall. But otherwise, we're just kind of on and off over the course of a year and a half. So there's been a long buildup. But, you know, I can only imagine what it's been like for the rest of the development crew. You know, 4 years for a lot of these people before I was involved. And so it's 5 now that they're printing discs and working on an enormous day one patch, I'm sure.
So, yeah, how's some of your work experience with BioWare been? This is your first time working with them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Have they been, you know, good to you? Is it different from other gigs you've had?
Okay. Well, it's different in a billion ways for me.
Okay.
Specifically, BioWare. I used to teach their scripts when I taught voice acting at Columbia College in Chicago.
Wow, that's cool.
Because their scripts are just so well written, and so now I'm working on their scripts.
That must be really surreal.
Yeah,
for you.
I was gonna say, that's different.
Oh, it is. You know, and I've told the story before, but the auditions for the project came through, and I knew exactly what I was auditioning for. I knew exactly what these scripts were, and I knew who they were from. And so I put in some good time to put the audition together. And now that you know, I've been working with them, the team and the people that they assembled locally here in LA, and then the people working all over, writing the scripts, all of it have been absolutely wonderful and just a pleasure to work with. Mm. Differences from other video game gigs are innumerable, partly because BioWare has their own flavor, their own work process. And then on top of that, I've never, MOBA parlance, I've never carried a game before, as it were. You know, and in fact, I used to joke with my friend Frida that the other player character, that because of my voice and other things like that I do and my acting background, whatnot, that I'm not really a carry in a game because I don't sound certain ways, things like that. And so to be doing that is crazy. So that's its own thing. You know, most of the time it's, you know, a video game job is one and done. You're in and out. Sometimes you come back for a second round, or maybe there's DLC or something. But, and I actually can't talk about it because they're going to release metrics. But the number of sessions that I had over the course of, again, a year and a half, unprecedented.
Really?
There's just you know, this kind of job. And the same thing would go true with all of the companions and others in the game. It's kind of unprecedented, the number of sessions and the work itself.
Has it felt, not to cut you off, has it ever felt like a little crunchy at times where you felt like you might not have put your best voice work in there? Or have they given you enough time and retakes and stuff throughout that? It seems like a shortened process, maybe. Or am I misinterpreting? Well,
No. Part of my job and everybody's job is to be efficient.
Okay.
So when you're knocking out, they say, hey, we'd like 324 lines today in 4 hours. Wow. And well, you do that. We had one day we knocked out like 400 something. But a lot of those were kind of call outs and things. And you just rip through those.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was late in the process. Mm. So we knew everything, you know, early on, not as many lines. We were still, you know, figuring out each other and our style, the style of the game, you know, the writer character. Okay. So it's never really felt crunchy time wise or anything like that. Everybody wants to give everything, you know, the time and energy it demands. But I also feel like everything had been set up from, again, the people I worked with and all the other prep work beforehand, that when we got in there and just went to work, that it did just work. Awesome. It functioned. And
I have to ask Tom, not to butt in, but before you mentioned that when you received the scripts, you knew that what it was relating to, that being Mass Effect. Usually a lot of what I read online with voice actors, if they receive a script or for an audition, they don't know the specific game. Were you told it was Mass Effect, or did you just know because you were so familiar with the subject matter?
Well, it said copyright EA BioWare at the bottom of the darn thing. So that's one thing.
And the new Dragon Age would not have planets. So.
Exactly. And exactly. They made and while they had changed character names and did things like that from the names that they had in the final project, the other thing is that they made reference to Turians and Solarians, and it was obvious. It was blatantly obvious.
So you were familiar with Mass Effect before all this? Was it through your teaching or playing?
Playing. Uh-oh. Entire trilogy, top to bottom, DLC.
Wow. Look at that.
That must be so cool for you, really.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that was a big part of it. So, I mean, that first few sessions, we're definitely checking in with Caroline saying, is this a real deal? You guys sure? you know, added to that kind of pressure and the sense of being an imposter was that was the first gig that I booked after moving to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, add that to this isn't real, right? This is not a thing. Okay. I'm temporary. I'm placeholder dialogue. You know, there was no callback. I thought there'd be something more involved, and there just wasn't. They just had a faith in something right off the bat. And Caroline, our director and voice director, all this other stuff, her ability to cast and top to bottom this game, the casting is just phenomenal. And I don't know what she's doing exactly, like what her process, her thought process is, even though I've kind of asked her a little bit, is, but she just got it right. And that's been part of the amazing thing is that that casting thing. Because I feel like I've done it wrong, but after a few sessions, it started to click, and there was a lot of stuff going on with the character and with my work and everybody else that it started to come, not necessarily easily, but naturally. Mm-hmm. And that's when I had the sense of, oh, maybe I'm supposed to be playing this role. This is kind of, you know, and that I've seen it in theater, voiceover, everything, that when you get that part right, you get the casting right, a lot of this stuff does just fall into place. And I have been miscast before. And that did not fall into place. So I know all of those things. So when things finally started clicking and grooving and we were really moving and I felt good about everything. And then, you know, you're saying, do you feel like you're not putting in your best work? You know, sometimes I do feel like, ooh, I want one more take, two more takes, something like that. But at some point, because, again, the speed and everything else with which we work, you just have to put faith in the process that they have put together.
Absolutely.
And you put faith in all the people on the other side of the glass and the faith in the people in Edmonton and everywhere else that are putting this thing together, that they know what they're doing. They know what they're looking for. We have it. And if we don't have it, they'll send it back and say, we need something different. And we, you know, re-recorded some stuff too. Occasional lines here and there. Happens.
So you did teach voice acting, but what really got you into this? And, you know, if you wanted to talk about some other previous video game work you've done as well, because you did mention you've done other one-offs, it seems.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the first, through an agent which shall remain nameless, they were the first agent I had, off of some show that I did, like relatively soon out of school. Mm-hmm. And the agent just sent me randomly on a voiceover audition. I came in, recorded onto a cassette tape.
we're going back to that.
Going back, yeah. And I just was in their office, no soundproofing, no booth or whatever like that.
Oh, wow.
And I recorded a couple different parts for this video game, and it was the first voiceover audition I did. Wow. And the first video game audition I did.
Hmm.
And I booked the darn job.
Wow.
I wound up playing, among other roles, because they brought me back for a few different sessions, I played Fiery Phoenix and Exile in Dao Fang, The Fist of Lotus.
Oh, I've got that game.
Yes, for the original Xbox.
Yes, for the original Xbox.
The first fighting game on the original Xbox. So that is me as Fiery Phoenix, Exile, Wulong Goth. Gosh, who else am I in there? Iron Fist, I think. Like, just a bunch of stuff because I'm in there with, of all people, John Tobias, half of John Tobias and Ed Boon, creators of Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
Oh, are you serious? That is so cool.
So I'm out. So I'm about a year out of university, and it's freaking John Tobias, right?
Mm.
and so, you know, working with him was great, and they kept bringing me back, and it was a great time. And then there's little stuff, but I never really put a lot into voiceover after that. But things like that were kind of tipping me off, saying, "Hey, you should probably pursue this thing." And I made my way through theater in Chicago. And over the years, I wound up running into people like a gentleman by the name of David Lewis, who cast me in some radio stuff. And he just sat me and my partner after the session aside and said, "Okay, you guys can do this. Who are you with? Who are you with? Do you have a demo? Do you have a demo?" You know, kind of pushing us. And that really kind of inspired me to go, "Oh, I guess I should put a little more into this." And over time, the theater stuff started to fall to the wayside for a variety of reasons. And voiceover started to pick up. And about 2008, somewhere in there, but a while ago now, almost 10 years, I finished my last stage show. And I turned to my fiance, now wife, and I said, "You know what? I don't think I'm going to pound the streets for this theater stuff anymore. This voiceover thing seems to be going pretty well, and I think that's where things are going to be for me. The hours are a little better. And the pay was a little better."
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And there were a few days that she was at work and I was playing Xbox. That's not fair. So I did get a little actor lazy there. But I put more and more into it. And I had an agent that I still have in Chicago, Grossman and Jack Talent, who have been supporting me since 2004 or so.
Wow. That's a while.
Yeah. And so they've been working with me for a very long time and they put a lot into me and I absolutely adore them and I am not here without them. So voiceover just kind of slowly took over. And as it did, I started to find things historically within my life and in my work that said, "You've been aiming at this the whole time." I used to come home from school and put off doing my homework to watch Tiny Toons, then Animaniacs, and Batman the Animated Series, and then because they used to have the when they used to have the credits full screen at the end, I would watch the credits to see the voice actors, and I actually wound up recording on VHS the credit sequences to pause it and read the names off. And I kept seeing some of the same names and some surprises. Mark Hamill, what the, you know, and things like that. And so I started following those people before the internet, you know, grabbed hold of them. And just watching that, you know, just little tip-offs like that through university training and elsewhere. I was usually kind of try to find the voice of a character. And a lot of other things would kind of fall into place once that happened. just, you know, little tip-offs that said this is probably where you should be going. But voice acting was not as front and center of a career path as it is today, and as it has been for, I want to say, like the last year since people like you guys, you know, and the internet as a whole grabbed hold of it.
Yeah.
So it is much more apparent that this is a thing that you can do for fun and profit. Whereas I was, you know, coming into Chicago going, I'm going to be an actor. And I didn't really have a focus. And definitely once I found that focus, a lot of other things started clicking, and then I put everything into it. And I absolutely adore this work and the people involved in it, whether it's commercials or, you know, animation, video games. I adore this work, not just as a job, but as a craft and as an art.
Awesome.
Wow. And you were talking about you moving from theater and doing this voice acting work. How hard is it for you to try and actually find work? I understand that that would be through your agency, but do you find that it's pretty easy nowadays to actually find work, especially because you're building up your own portfolio?
No. I think because I'm not at that point where, you know, and I'm sure these, and I'm sure some of the names that I'm going to name, you know, aren't necessarily, you know, the people aren't just handing them stuff as you might think, but yeah. I am, you know, I'm not Mr. Matt Mercer. I am not, you know, Maurice LaMarche or, you know, any of these gentlemen or, you know, Kath Soucie or something like that, or Debbie Derryberry. I am here auditioning every day. I cranked out 5 or 6 auditions this morning for stuff I probably won't get. And you just, that's just what you do every day. I always imagine, you know, Rob Paulsen, you know, Yakko on Animaniacs, the current Donatello on the Ninja Turtles, after he was, you know, Raphael and the original Ninja Turtles when I watched it in the 80s, you know, this kind of thing. I imagine him walking into a callback for something. And somebody my age, younger, much younger, going, oh, Mr. Paulsen, I love you. I love your work. I've been listening to you and watching you for a very long time. And he would say, oh, thank you very much. I appreciate hearing that. And then that person goes, but can you do this? I don't know. I've only listened to you for half of my life, you know, and adore your work and everything. But I don't know. Can you read these words that I wrote? And you're just constantly having your... you know, having your abilities and everything else put to the test. They're always checking, you know. I love you. I love your work. I love watching you play. Can you play with me? You know, will you work well in this thing and can we play together? And is that a good fit? And so there's always going to be that auditioning process. I'm forgetting the gentleman's name, but it's terrible of me because he's wonderful. He's a wonderful actor. But it was only after he played Davy Jones in the second Pirates of the Caribbean.
Wow.
Movie.
Wow. No way.
That's cool.
So he plays Davy Jones, and somebody said, so you've got this now like newfound fame and all this other stuff. What do you think? And he said, quite honestly, well, I don't have to audition for parts now. People just kind of send me scripts and say, would you like to play this? That's nice.
I'm sure it would be.
And that's it, you know? And, you know, that's an amazing, wonderful, wonderful place to be at. So, you know, things aren't easier. I mean, I'm better at my job. And you kind of just gloss over this part because most of your job is auditioning. And you just learn to deal with that and enjoy that process. And
was it Bill Nighy?
Yes. Yes,
yeah,
Bill Nighy.
That's who it is, yeah.
Who I remember...
Underworld first. Is where I remember him.
Yeah, yeah. I first saw him in Love Actually.
Love Actually, yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. He's wonderful in that. He was wonderful in that. And I remember seeing him there for the first time going, this guy's brilliant. Yeah, and then suddenly...
He's honestly one of the best bad guys, though. I mean, as Davy Jones, he's Underworld. He's a bad guy. Well, sort of a bad guy. He does a great job. Yeah, I love his style.
He does, yeah.
Yeah, I rewatched Pirates after seeing this interview with him and really watched that performance and just went, yeah, that is amazing and original, and that's just phenomenal. And to act through that, you know, digital makeup, it's like Ron Perlman level stuff where, you know, How did
Hellboy. Hellboy. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God. You know, Ron can't use his eyebrows half the time with the stuff they put on him. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. He was also brilliant in Fantastic Beasts.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, he's amazing, you know?
Yeah, I love him in Harry Potter as well. He did well there.
So you talked about how you played all the Mass Effects. That's awesome. With that being said, though, Carrick, you had a really good question in regards to that earlier that we were discussing.
Oh, which, the
about
stress?
Commander Shepard, yeah.
Yeah, so basically I wanted to ask, this is something that, you know, we try to always ask people, especially when they're taken over into a series, how you handle the stress of, you know, the expectations of Shepard being, you know, that original major character and sort of taken over. And being a new character in the new ones, like, how did you handle that? Did you just go into it and you were like, this is the way it's going to be? Or did you, I mean, did you, you'd known those games, you're familiar with them. Yep. So how did you handle that extra pressure?
Well, a lot of
it
was
did you feel it? Maybe you didn't feel it.
Well, a little bit. Anytime I, you know, again, realizing that I'm the player character and I'm like a cipher for, you know, the player and what they want out of things, and hopefully expressing what they think when they choose a particular reaction. And especially for the writers, you know, they're writing things in a certain way. And from that, from the writing and direction and things like that early on, they wanted to make sure that they had set the writers apart in that they wanted to make sure that they weren't Shepard. These were not heroes that became legends, as I believe Aaron Flynn has said. These are explorers that kind of have to have the mantle of hero dumped on them. And that is their story. It's kind of their coming of age story in this new galaxy. And so that took a lot of the pressure off, because it was obvious from the beginning, oh, we are not Shepard.
Right.
And we can't be. So don't even worry about playing it that way. The only thing I will say that I felt nervous about is a couple times I heard Frida, who's kind of a badass, like, in person. So she's doing her stuff as Sarah, and some of, like, the kind of the intimidating lines, or you kind of step up, you got to kind of prove yourself to a Krogan or something. And the way Frida does it, almost effortlessly, these kind of tough, like, I'm going to punch you as soon as talk at you kind of lines and deliveries. And I had this concern, like, guys, I don't think I sound that tough. I don't think I sound that badass. So please keep an eye on that, because I don't think that that's, there's so many other facets of Scott Ryder that I think I'm hooking into and I'm getting. I don't know about that part.
Right.
And they said, no, we've got stuff. Or I'd say something in a certain way. And my director, Josh, would say that. If you're ever concerned again, whatever you had going on there, that's the feel, that's the thought, that's your writer's gonna be a tough guy at this point. So okay, hold on.
Very
to
Very cool.
You know, because it's tough. You know what Mark Meer laid down as Shepard's amazing, and of course, you know what Jennifer Hale did as a Shepard, again, iconic. You know, roles and deliveries and way they put it together, and so, you know, it's creatively they separated it, and then. Again, at the end of the day, you know, Frieda and I have to do our own thing. We can't do that and go in there and reproduce that. It's already been done, right? So then what do we bring to the table and just do the best version of that we can?
Right. Very cool.
Yeah, so you... Wait, you were going
to
say something?
Sorry, I wanted to ask quickly. How do you think it's going to be? You said you've played the previous Mass Effect games. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be weird? I don't know if you are going to replay this game, but it's going to be weird playing this game with your voice there, because I've asked a few other voice actors in the past, and they think, yes, it's kind of strange, but eventually you get over it.
Yeah, I mean, my kids have played Octodad a billion times to Sunday, and so I'm all over that game. Freed and I are both all over the game. Oh, thank you. Yeah, those guys, shout out to Young Horses. Those guys got in on the trend before it was cool.
Yeah.
There, right? All right? Me and Frida, they knew what they were doing. And, you know, I got used to that for a variety of reasons, and I still listen to that, as my son kind of calls it up every now and then on the iPad. And with the exception of a couple of chef lines here or there, something like that, I go, "Yep, that's right. I don't think I'm going to do that any better. Those that's the right delivery and everything. We got good stuff in that, in the can for that. I'm very, very happy. My first playthrough in Andromeda is going to be Sarah Ryder. I cannot deal with 60 hours because I will, as anybody who's worked with me will say, it's like, Tom may deliver X, Y, and Z, and it's all great, but in the back of his mind, he's always like directing and engineering and doing all this crazy stuff at the same time. So I'm very self-critical. And I know, you know, there's going to be points of the game where Sarah and Scott are there at the same time. You know, we're not we're not excluding each other on any playthrough like the Shepherds were. So I'm going to run into me, you know, I'll deal with that then. Mm-hmm. And I probably will go through maybe a second time just to hear where it was at. You know, I guess I'm used to it for the most part.
Yeah.
But yeah, that first playthrough is going to be Sarah, just to avoid that awkwardness and actually try to sit down and play the game.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to listening to all of the other people in the game because I only got snippets here and there. And that was exceptionally exciting when I got to hear somebody else's work. So I'm really looking forward to hearing everybody else in the game.
I have a question. I've never asked a voice actor this before, but it's just crossed my mind. For me, I know these are two different things where voice acting, making YouTube videos. But for me, like if I'm sitting in a room and someone fires up one of my videos, like I hate it. I can't stand it. I don't know if it's like I don't like hearing my voice or whatever. It's just I just don't like that. Do you get that same feeling when, like, I don't know, maybe it's different with your kid, but if someone were to fire up a game and, you know, you start hearing your own voice playing on the TV, let's say you're playing Andromeda, Scott and Sarah in the same room, you know, do you get that sort of, I don't want to say uncomfortable, but that feeling I'm sort of talking about?
A little bit. And it's usually tempered by, I go, oh, that, you know, that happened. But I'll be listening to it and it'll be a, really, that's the take you chose? that's the one.
What were you thinking,
Tom? I'm pretty sure you had a better take in the can than that. Okay, fine. Not up to me. Or on commercials, I can tell when they have compressed it, like the back end of a commercial at the time.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, things like that. It's not so
the things that, you know, behind the scenes bothersome. That people just playing it might not pick up on.
Yeah. Okay. And that's what I'm thinking. Those are the things that I'm thinking about, rather than it being too awkward. You know, years ago there, I had I was doing some different stuff for a McDonald's, and my wife she says she's driving home, and she says, "Oh God, have you heard this new McDonald's commercial that I was talking about?" No. Same thing.
Is it the McRib one?
No, right? That's a good one. She said, "I said, what McDonald's commercial?" She says, "Oh gosh, this one with this, like, I don't know, is this Chef?" And he's, and I said, "Is it Chef? Is it Chef Pepe?" "Yes, that's what it is. Have you heard this?" I said, "Honey, I'm Chef Pepe."
"What?"
"Yeah, they asked for this goofy French chef, and then we did it over the top, and that's the version they chose." "I hate that commercial." And I said, "Well, that commercial is, you know, helping pay for groceries this month."
Exactly. When divorces happen. No, yeah. Just joking.
But, man, you know, so you get used to that. I've got some stuff running for Universal Studios Hollywood California, the theme park here. So every now and then that'll pop up on the radio. And, you know, again, after years of this, I just go, yeah, that's a good spot.
That's awesome. Yeah. When you think about it, you see them all over the place. That's awesome.
Well, historically speaking, it's not, you know, this ain't. A few years ago, it had been better. I could say, oh, I had this spot running, and this was us. And this. Now it's a little more sparse, you know, more audiobooks and things like that. But you do everything you can to keep it going.
So from what you've said, I mean, I guess you and Frida were friends before Andromeda have worked together. So, you know, I'd say you guys seem to have pretty good chemistry. And in that video, I saw it on IGN where you two were together in the booth. That was funny stuff. Do you think that type of relationship translates well into the game, especially something like Mass Effect, where it's a lot about building relationships and learning about characters?
Well, we didn't do anything together, although they did consider recording some of the Scott and Sarah, when the two of them are together, scenes together. Mm. We never actually worked together
really
for any of it. But what happened is that relatively early in the process, it's like, do we, Fried and I were talking, it's like, do we let them know kind of organically or slip it in, or how do we tell them that we know each other, like know each other, like we did a game together and that became a thing. And so she kind of dropped it during a session and they said, wait, what? And Fried explained the story. And so then, you know, I had the same thing during another session. They said, hey, Frieda tells me, you know, this. And I said, yeah, we, you know, knew each other before this game, which is very rare because there's a lot of isolation in voiceover,
yeah,
in the voice acting industry. That's why when voice actors see each other, it seemed like we're long lost friends and there's hugs and all sorts of things going on. And it's true because we haven't seen each other in forever. Maybe, you know, Twitter or something like that. But it's been a while since any of us have actually seen each other. So it really didn't add anything to the game. Maybe a competitive thing, which is kind of silly, you know, which is kind of silly. But I personally really enjoyed having Frieda there because, again, for this year and a half long process, I had somebody I could kind of talk to about it. Which was great. You know, I could say how this went go today, or ooh, we did this. And otherwise, I've just had to keep all of that stuff to myself and not tell a soul for a very, very long time.
Which isn't easy.
How hard was that for you?
Pretty tough. I mean, not too bad, but pretty tough because I had friends, all of my friends from university and others that are also big game people. We kind of bonded through through college on video games about it. You know, we used to sit around in one person's room or another, watch somebody play Final Fantasy Tactics or all sorts of stuff like that. And so, yeah, keeping that, you know, I'd had other games in the past. Yeah, I worked on this. Everybody went, yeah, cool. But, you know, nothing like this. So it was tricky, mostly to kind of, and, you know, for me being new to California, new to Los Angeles, new to the West Coast portion of the business, you know, in the back of my mind as the kind of cynical actor looking at marketing and whatever, I'm thinking, boy, I would love to be able to use this as like a little feather in the cap. You know, it's not, you know, it's not really a promotional selling point. You know, nobody cares that you did that. They want to know what you are doing right now. But, you know, being able to drop that and maybe it'll, you know, maybe, you know, somebody will listen to an audition and maybe recognize my name or work or something and bring me in for a callback or say, you know what, we can't use him in this role, but I can use him for Soldier Number 4 because I know for a fact because he did this game, he can knock out, you know, 350 lines in 4 hours and he'll be able to, you know, we can trust him to knock out whatever we've got for this thing. So who knows, maybe that plays into it or maybe it doesn't, but
cool.
Yeah, sitting on that was tricky.
Cause when I was watching that video, we were talking a little bit about you and Frieda, you know, she was saying how like she helped you with the romantic scene. I was like, is this true? Like, I couldn't figure that out. No. But I guess since you guys weren't working together physically.
No, that was a bit.
That was a bit. Right, yeah, I figured as much.
And what was really funny is that Conal Pierce and the others at BioWare came up with that bit independent of the fact that Frieda and I had actually done like silly sibling rivalry bits on Twitter way before we ever shot that. And Frieda even asked, are you guys following us on Twitter? They said, no, why? And Frieda and I looked at each other and said, we've been playing this game like on Twitter. Who was born first and all sorts of silliness and without, you know, without prompting from you guys. And they went, oh, this is perfect. So there's a lot of serendipity in the two of us working on this too, that worked out for, I like to think anyways, that worked out for the game and BioWare as a promotional thing. You know, the fact that we have that relationship means we could create that video rather than it being two actors just kind of being awkward, you know, playing something off. We actually do have a relationship and can play around like that and not think anything of it. And we're obviously very active on Twitter and, you know, love the whole community aspect of it. So a lot of it just kind of clicked in there and we're happy to take that role. We're happy to do that. You know, we love the community. We're fans ourselves. So to be fanning ourselves as we interact with fans. You know, it's a lot of fun. It's like, yes, I'm vibrating with you in excitement.
I have a question. So we always have a lot of people who ask, like, how do you get, especially in this part, how do you get into the business? So if you were to give some advice to people who wanted to do this, would it just be like making demos? What, I think David Bateson from Hitman just said, make sure you actually go out and tell people what you're doing because nobody will fight for you. Is there any advice you would give to people who want to do this?
I got to go with the standard. It's a book title too, but from Steve Martin. Be so good they can't ignore you. And then follow that up with the Will Wheaton rule of don't be a dick.
Will Wheaton. Will Wheaton.
It's well, a rule.
Well, that's advice for
it's a rule. It yeah. is, but you'd be right. surprised at how often you actually need to tell some people about that.
Well, GDC, did you guys hear that the Oblivion or the Obsidian writer, what's his name that you like so much, Maddie?
Chris Avalon.
Yeah, did you hear his story about working with Ron Perlman? Ron Perlman threatening his life because he didn't want to speak. Whatever, there was an argument about the lines, and he was like, "You never want to have a pissed off Ron Perlman threatening your life in a voice box. You just never want that. You never want to have to deal with that. So yeah, not being a dick is probably a top priority.
I mean, that goes for. I don't care what it is you want to do, and those rules can go for anything you want to do. In this. Frida's got a great extensive blog post on her thing. You know, we have very different backgrounds as to how we came into this thing. And I really appreciate and love her perspective on a lot of this stuff because hers, you know, I fell into things and, you know, I was an actor. I mean, still am, obviously, but, you know, a face actor, a stage actor, doing all these things, working my way in. I did Shakespeare, all this stuff, just crunchy stuff. And she comes from I'm taking classes and I got to do improv. I'm going to go to Upright Citizens after being in game development for a while. So she has a very different and unique perspective, especially as somebody who just freaking busted her butt to make these things happen. In addition to her own, you know, natural abilities, gifts, she busted her butt to make this stuff happen. And I've been floating along and working on things and keeping a bunch of stuff in the air to make it happen. So her stuff on fridawolf.com, if you go to her blogs and she has a list and just go on to any of that stuff about how, you know, she recommends, especially LA and video game stuff. But I recommend learning how to act first and foremost and how to interact with an audience. So it doesn't have to be, you know, acting classes. It can be acting classes. It can be improv classes. It can be musicians. Some of the best voice actors that I know back in Chicago and elsewhere are musicians or were musicians or still are. A friend of mine, she's got a band, and it's because she knows how to interact and affect an audience. And that's a lot of what acting is. So that really plays into it. Gosh, what else? Don't be a dick. you know, and you know, a lot of the usual keep plugging at it and things like that. Demos are very expensive. Don't get a professionally made demo done until you are actually good. Because you can spend a lot of money, and I did it. You can spend a lot of money on a junk demo. My first demo out of the gate was thousands of dollars back in Chicago, and this is a long time ago before demos actually were that expensive, in my opinion. It was overly expensive, and I had to press CDs. It was terrible. So I went in for one of my second agents who signed me, and they said, well, your demo's okay, but your resume is all over the board. So I was brought in basically on my resume, not the, you know, $3,000 demo that I had there. And a lot of my stuff has worked that way, which is where, you know, It's tough for me to get in the room, but usually when they let me in the room, they keep me in the room. You know, I'm able to, I show up and I do the job, you know? And you know, and that kind of thing really plays into it. Again, don't be a dick. there's really nothing that I would add to what Frida's got on her website or iwannabeavoiceactor.com, which is Dee Bradley Baker's site. Yeah, you know, because a lot of it are adages and just steps and things you should do and work on, and everybody's going to have their own particular path at it. But the one piece of, like, just in your gut, something to strive for is just be so good they can't ignore you. Because when the stars align and that opportunity arises, if you work at it, you will show up and you will bring your A game, and that opportunity will be yours. Mm-hmm. The only time, and if you falter at that, that may have been your break or your opportunity. So you just always have to be ready to play.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I have to ask, you said before that you moved to LA to pursue mm-hmm. this work. It seems that every voice actor moves to LA to pursue this work. How crucial is it to be in that city in the Cali area? Not just for acting generally, but voice actors are always there. They always seem to be living there.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of like a stigma, or just like the, I gotta be in LA, so I'm curious. Yeah.
Well, what do you want to do? What kind of voice acting do you want to do? I know people who are exceptionally successful. Voice actors living in Colorado, and a really good friend of mine, he's a great actor, great voice actor, phenomenal audiobook narrator, and he works from a very nice booth in a nice area outside of Denver, Colorado, and half of his money is like the non-union internet-based worldwide voiceover market, and then the other half is audiobooks. Chicago is very much a commercial town, and I saw kind of where the lay of the land was going there. And then for me and for my wife's work, we just looked long-term, and I didn't see long-term there. But, you know, nobody knows how to advertise anymore. And the advertising dollars that they are spending are not with regular actors like myself and my peers and friends and others out in Chicago. And so I thought, but you know what there are? There are a lot of outlets for content. YouTube, Netflix, Amazon. Everybody's, there's so much content being made. And where is content made? New York and LA. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you're going to, you know, and a personal thing for me too was that I was teaching again for a few years, voice acting for video games, or as I like to call it, the fine art of screaming and bleeding and dying for fun and profit. And, there was a point, and I told my last few classes who were very sweetly bummed out when I was leaving, that I felt like I couldn't do them or the teaching justice to talk about people like, you know, like Matt Mercer and Kath Soucie and Danielle McRae and all these other people, and not come out here and play with the big boys. I felt like I had no ground to stand on and authority with which to speak if I didn't come out here and try to compete and kind of put my theories to practice and to the test. So it was very personal for me to be able to try to come out here and do this thing. Okay. I get because I just, there are so many people, especially as, I think it's any artist, but the actors in particular, who are just out there trying to take your money. You know, teaching a new thing or a method or a book or a class or something. And I think this, again, because it's any time you have any kind of career path that has a creative process to it, everybody's always trying to get that next edge, that next something, and you're always supposed to be looking at it, you know, taking a class to go to the next level. Well, who do you trust? And in the voiceover marketplace, especially with the proliferation of online voiceover, everybody's out there trying to make a buck. And I didn't ever want to be perceived as doing that or attempting to do that. Mm. Very important for me, for my integrity. One of the reasons why I kind of taught at a college, because, you know, then I've got the weight of the college behind me and some support there. I really wanted to practice what I preach and see if I could come out here and can compete.
Seems to be working out. Do you think this is going to be like the first of many for you? When it comes to really big gigs, I mean, you've had a lot of work.
Oh, man, I hope so. I hope so. That's the goal, right? I mean, part of me is definitely does not want it to be a one and done. I'll tell you right now. I don't try to. I don't pitch myself as a one-trick pony, but you don't want to be one. But if it happens, it happens. I've got other stuff in the pipeline I can't talk about. That is a cool little feather, and I really enjoyed working on. And the audiobooks are still moving and grooving. So with other stuff, we'll see. We'll see. I'm hopeful, and I've got good agency here that's been very, very kind to me, and working for me. So we shall see.
Awesome.
Are there any video games, publishers, whoever or whatever, that you would really love to work with? Like at the top of your list, if you had a couple of wishes in terms of games to be in or whatever, what would they be?
Blizzard.
Oh, shit.
You could be the next Overwatch hero.
Yeah.
Come on, Tom. Let's do it.
No, man. I'll tell you something about the Overwatch heroes. Especially the new people they're bringing into the diversity and kind of like the off-cast. Not the off-casting, but they found like some really amazing original people and sounds for some of those roles that are just amazing. And
they are some really
that's
good
not...
Ones.
Yeah, and it's like that's not necessarily... what I bring, you know, historically, we'll see. Maybe it'll change. But my one of the people that I always kind of thought was wonderful and still is wonderful. He's still around. But a gentleman by the name of Bob Bergen, and people kind of take his claim to fame as having one, an animation class that is booked 2 years in advance.
Wow.
And the other thing is that he's been the voice of Porky Pig for a very long time. But for me, for my money, Bob is amazing because you go watch any animated movie in that also with or additional voices is Bob Bergen. Because he has the ability to go, all right, Bob, fade into the background. Okay, Bob, pick up this. We need this or this or this. Slot in here, Bob. And he's in on all of that. And they know him, and they can trust him, and he has the versatility to create and do all that stuff. And it's like, okay, Bob, we need you to stand out. And he does. And suddenly, you know, it's Porky Pig. And he's from the Midwest. And so if there's anybody kind of whose career I kind of aspire to, it would be like that, where you're just working, you know, which is kind of like a Midwestern kind of, you know, Chicago actor kind of thing. I got a buddy of mine by the name of John Hugenacker, phenomenal actor, better than I ever have been.
Don't he's a better actor, man.
No. John's awesome. John's amazing. And he's done a bunch of movies and TV shows, and all this wonderful stuff in Chicago. It was a few years ago. I think he's okay. I'm pretty sure he's okay. But John and I were talking on the street, and he was very frustrated a number of years ago because there were a bunch of these TV shows sitting down in Chicago. And John's agent wasn't sending him out to audition for any of them. And he was in this really slow period. He said, why aren't you sending me to audition for any of this stuff? And his agent said, John, your career and your resume is at such a point that if these shows are going to sit down for this length of time, I don't want to waste you on Cop Number 5 or Detective Jones, who has a one and done episode thing. Because once that happens, they can't use you again for like 2 years. It's like contractual. So they were saving him for something real meaty, like a reoccurring that's a thread throughout a whole season or something like that. Same thing with film work. And John expressed to me, he's like, I understand. I get it. And that's cool of them. But you know me, man, I just want to work.
Got to pay the bills too.
Yeah. And that's very much, you know, out here, I'm sure everybody still wants to just work out here too, but it's a very Chicago thing to be in that position. You know, John's in a great position with that. It's a wonderful place for him to be. And it speaks to him as a commodity to his agent, but then also to, as an actor, he's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But that just, you know, I'm a Chicago working guy, just kicks in, and he's like, I just want to work. I don't care if it's Cop Number 5. That sounds like fun to me. And so that game is always kind of like, you know, pressuring you in the back of your head. And so that's kind of how I look at it. It's like, I just want to work, man.
Yeah.
That's cool. It's different. Mm-hmm. Off the cuff question. Totally nothing to do with work, way less serious, but I gathered a question from a patron look, man, Mass Effect is well known for its romance. You've played the games, you're probably familiar with it. So, what was it like? You don't have to give details or spoilers. What was it like recording, you know, some of the sex scenes that you encounter in Andromeda that are inevitably going to be there? There's been a lot of talk on Twitter. Anytime, I think Michael something, I forgot his name. Anytime he tweets out about a new companion or something, they're like, can I bang them? Everyone's asking about it. So what was your experience like with the Mass Effect romance?
It was cool. There, so you were doing this one in particular, and I don't know if that translates to other scenes or something, but we had to do like the sounds of the culmination for a sequence or so.
Wow.
So you're in the booth kissing your hand to time, you know, making noises like that, little bit of heavy breathing and whatnot. But then at the same time, you're doing this to almost completed animation. And
that's so you're watching this all like, happen, and you're
watching the animation, and it's just not every day you see that when you go to work. You go, well, this is happening. Okay, welcome to Thursday. Welcome to a Thursday in Andromeda. How was your day? It's just another thing. You giggle and you go on, and for a year and a half, I'm making the writer, I hardly know her, you know, jokes and, you know, things like that. The pretty good banging came out of the Twitterverse. Frida's joke throughout the process as she would talk to anybody. Can I sex you? No? Bye. You know, forget the rest of the question wheel. Can I sex you? No?
No.
I must go. I should get going. Fantastic. Yeah. I believe our Josh, our director, local, got her a shirt that said, can I sex you? No. Bye.
Yeah, that's great.
It was true. And it's very true. It was his bit. And so it was kind of fun when the whole hashtag pretty good banging started on fire, and then the developers picked up on it, and it's, you know, it's wonderful to see that they kind of all get the joke. They're just as much a part of the whole Mass Effect fan community as the fans are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They get it. They get, you know, what some people show up to Mass Effect for. and I think that comes through in everything that they create, whether it's the writing or other things. They put all of that fandom into the game that they're creating, saying, you know what they're going to want? They're going to want this. There's some great stuff like that. I wouldn't necessarily call it fan service, but, mm-hmm. you know, from points standpoint of kind of like the diverse cast and diverse relationships and things like that, there's a lot of that in there that I'm a fan of. And a couple relationship sequences that for me were just wonderful. I wish I knew. I was talking to one of the writers on Twitter a little while ago, and I asked, like, who did this sequence? Who wrote this particular relationship sequence? And I don't remember she gave me the full answer, because it was just one of those things that I went, that is brilliantly done. It's my favorite sequence in the whole game, just because of the subject matter
and how they dealt. Particular.
Yeah, and I can't even talk about it because, you know, spoilers. But there was a sequence, and again, it's just a relationship sequence, mm-hmm. that I thought, that's brilliant. It's just so wonderfully handled and gently done and tastefully done. And like, you know, modern sensibilities are thrown aside because we're in the future and it's about this versus rather than being about this. And I loved it. And I said, send it up the chain. This is my favorite. This is my favorite part. But then there were some other things and a couple lines and other things for like Vetra. Working with Vetra, mm-hmm. as a companion, that I said, that's my favorite line. Send it up the chain. And then, like, the next week, there'd be something with Drac, and I'd say, that's my favorite line. Send it up the chain. So there was always something, and that's one of the reasons why I, like, followed all the writers. And I, like, thanked them all in person and said, you guys are the best, because you made this job kind of easy in some ways and just absolute fun, you know, an absolute joy to do.
I wanted to ask you, you were talking about the community just before. How does it feel just to be a part of this big community that is Mass Effect? It might feel a bit surreal, I used that word before, not just being in the game, but also being a part of this huge community, because people, when they play games, tend to form connections with the voice actors because they're personifying their favorite characters. So how does it feel just to be a part of this big community?
Really, very cool. I mean, the community has been very overwhelmingly positive. I think Frida and I did something with Mass Effect France a couple weeks back, and she's like, yeah, 99% totally awesome. You know, 1% trolls, you know, and yeah. So it's such a minority. Very supportive, very wonderful. Especially since you guys haven't even heard a damn thing yet. Y'all ain't even heard us work yet, and you're all like, oh, it's got Sarah. It's like, you haven't heard anything. You've heard 15 seconds of either of us, you know, combined. You might not.
It sucks. Moving on.
Exactly. Well, I'm reminded, I don't remember what live concert it was, but it was like an Eddie Murphy live recording back in the 80s. And, you know, the announcer says, ladies and gentlemen, Eddie Murphy. And you hear the crowd just roaring and roaring and roaring. And Eddie Murphy comes out. He says, yeah, all right. Y'all sit your asses down, okay? And pardon the language, he says, says, oh, y'all, you know, sit your ass down. You know, I might not even be funny. Y'all be out here clapping your asses off and shit. And afterwards, you'll be like, you know what? He wasn't even funny. And that's kind of how I feel about this. It's like, you guys might not like any of this.
Yeah, welcome to Game Hype.
That's brilliant.
All right.
Yeah.
But with that in mind, I feel like what happened with Mr. Mir and Ms. Hale is that their popularity as the Shepherd kind of picked up over time, whereas I think the fans cling to and lock on to the companions much more readily than they do the player character. For a variety of very good reasons. A lot of times the player character is kind of generic in tone or sound. Not that Mark or Jen are generic in any way, but you know, you go, okay, I get this. And our job is to get out of the way so the player can have their own choices. Whereas the voices and other things like that of the companions are front and center, and those people sound amazing, and their work is amazing. And anytime I got just a little bit of these other people's voices and their work in my ears, I had these moments of, oh my God, why am I here? These people are amazing and, you know, just absolutely wonderful. I hope that when they ever got to hear me, I hope that they got just a fraction from me of what I got from them insofar as, I don't know, inspiration or something, you know. Right. Every now and then I'd get somebody else and I'd go, oh, the acting's coming so quickly because I've got this and I know exactly how this goes, knowing how this person sounds and reacts. And so those are the ones that the fans hook on to. But, you know, thanks for spending a few hours with me. And Frida, we appreciate it.
Interesting. All right. Well, does anyone have any other questions? We're just about to wrap up the hour.
No, I'm all good. It was awesome speaking with you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that was great.
Excited to finally actually play it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Tom, any closing thoughts, man?
No, thanks
fans out there.
Yeah, you know what? Thanks again for having me, and thanks again to everybody for being supportive and welcoming of everybody the second our names and Twitter handles are released to the public. It's been wonderful again as a, not just somebody who kind of just plopped down into LA and suddenly, oh, here you go. Now you're part of this franchise that you know and love. But also, you know, just as an actor, just kind of finding my way and doing this thing and, enjoying it just as much as everybody else. So enjoy it. Follow me on Twitter @Taylorson.
Yep, we got it'll your be Twitter,
everyone do that.
There, the whole yeah. video, oh. you're fine.
You better follow him.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, I don't know. I have a Facebook page. That's mostly audiobook stuff. I don't update it often because there's not that much news. But thank you all again for having me. Thanks again for enjoying it. And I hope everybody got something from our very one-sided discussion.
No,
it's very interesting. Yeah, thank you for taking the time. Honestly. Yeah,
we've had a couple of voice actors on here before, but your story is a lot way different from what I've heard from a bunch of others. So it was really insightful, honestly.
Oh, good. Yeah. Everybody's got the story. There's value in all of it. You know, it's going to touch different people in different ways and not in bad ways. I hope.
All right.
Show me on the doll with a voice actor's story.
Exactly.
Right in the heart.
Right.
Touch my special area.
All right. Well, we hope everyone enjoyed this wonderful interview with Tom, the male protagonist, Scott Ryder, in Mass Effect Andromeda. Be sure to, as he said, follow him on Twitter. Check out his Facebook page. Those will be linked down below, and they've been on screen the whole video, so you should have done it by this point in time. If you haven't, now's your chance. Once again, we hope you guys enjoyed. Thank you once again, Tom, and we'll catch you next week.